But I do want to take a little bit and share. And I think, really, on what many of the people that have shared already have focused on, I think there's something that I hear over and over for people that come to the church is an immediate sense of belonging. And everybody's got a little bit of a different reason why. In fact, I think oftentimes for people, whether they know it or not, it's the cross that's in front of the church. There's something about it that is beautiful and simple and disarming. But there's something as well that I think my wife and I, as we were doing the membership class this last week, we're just talking about how we came and felt the same thing. In fact, we had basically all but committed to a different position when we walked in here. And I walked in here not even considering the job, but curious about the church. I was curious about a preaching rotation, and had been doing that with one of my friends, Billy, and some others, and thought it could work. And so when Brad cold called me and we ended up talking about the church and he explained that, I said, well, I'm not interested in the job, but I'd love to just see the church. And Patty and I walked in here and went, oh, I think this is where we're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's significant. I don't think it's accidental. And I think that there's something about the church that was here before we got here that is an important part of its mission and its calling. And a lot of that, I think it's hard to describe, but it's important that we also take the time to really think it through, because I think it's something that we've been entrusted with, all of us, to protect and to continue to provide. And so as we've been thinking through that, you know, I remember Steve one time we were doing a time on vision, and God had really laid on his heart that old orders were still good orders, which made us kind of go back through the history and go, well, what are the orders that we've received? We understand that one of the unique things, and this is inherent in the teaching rotation, I think, but is this idea of unity and diversity. And I've mentioned this, you know, this to you before, that I think oftentimes we call unity when it's really homogeneity. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, everybody's just the same, and we go, wow, we all like the same color. Isn't this amazing? And you're going, no, you just all like the same color. So the idea of unity really, in its essence, requires diversity. And that's something that I think, if you look around us, is getting harder and harder and harder, right? That we live in a world that has never been more fragmented and more polarized than now. It's like the water that we swim in. I think we don't even realize the effect it's had, but I think all of our heart rates have increased, all of our blood pressure has increased, just because of sort of the anxiety that's out there and the polarization. And so we are a part of a work here in this church that I think is just becoming more and more significant. Really learning how we as a body of Christ can model that diversity. And it's right there in the body of Christ, right? The illustration is about diversity and unity and diversity. And how do we live that out? The other word that I remember, and I forget exactly where this came from, it may even have been Vicky, or at least Vicky could point to it. The MASH unit? Who is that? Was that you? Somebody else says?
Margie.
So from that era, there was just this idea of Church by the Sea as a MASH unit. Isn't that work? Like, you think, we want to think a hospital, but we're fooling ourselves if we think we're that high tech. But there's something kind of in the organic way that works, where tending to the wounded, but people that are like right in the thick of it. And that this sort of healing ministry has been a part of our DNA for a long time. And I think that's part of why when people walk into the church, that sense of belonging is the fact that they know they're cared for, that they don't need to hide their wounds, that all of us are wounded. It's like the wounded caring for the wounded, right, in so many ways. But to go, this is a huge part, in my mind, it's a huge part of the work of the gospel. It's what we do, but it seems to be a specific assignment for this church as well. And so we've talked about what that means, this importance of safety. And how do we keep this church feeling that sort of safety, that sort of grace that's here, that sort of freedom, that freedom to be who you are and who you're called to be, and yet at the same time able to coexist without fracture. And I think really with that humility, or with that safety, we're talking about humility. And I think it's there in the cross. As you look at the beauty of that cross, you see a humble cross, and I think that's right. And so how do we be, as Church by the Sea, true to our nature? And I think part of it requires this sort of humility. I think the diversity requires humility. I think others feeling safe. And I was thinking about, you know, as we've talked about the rotation, we've talked about these different things within the church, different streams of the Christian faith. You know, you've got a contemplative stream, and you've got a deep biblical stream, and an evangelism stream, and you've got a charismatic worship stream, and you go, each of these things we've tried to really just savor and value. So often churches splinter over those things, and they pick one, and we've really tried to hold on to them, but it's hard, and I think getting harder. I was listening to a talk, and somebody was saying, you know, it used to be in conversation, you could just follow Henry Higgins' advice from My Fair Lady, you know, where they say, just talk about health and the weather, right? And they're like, now you got global warming and anti-vaccine, so forget that. But sort of a tendency with all the polarization that's going on, it can get hard. It can get hard to talk to the person that disagrees. But this is the exercise that we've chosen, I think, has been chosen for us in many ways. And I've been thinking about this. How do we as a church really lean into this calling? And I heard somebody speaking a model that I thought was really helpful for me, and I want to just present it to you. Steve mentioned it the other day in his sermon, but it's kind of going, there's two different ways to draw a church together. And the first way is to build a fence. And that clearly defines this is who's in and this is who's out. And I think there can easily be a tendency to do church that way. How do we know who we are? We build a fence, right? You fit. And you can imagine in this day and age, the fences are getting different. And as it turns out, I think there's this human tendency when we build fences, we build them around ourselves so that we're in, right? Has anybody ever built a fence that they didn't belong inside? And so it creates often a lot of conflict, right? There's a sort of anxiety underneath that. But the other model, and the one that I find my heart really resonating with, is this idea of building a well. And building a well is to say, whoever's thirsty, come and drink, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very different approach, and yet in many ways has a similar sort of effect. It's a way of gathering the sheep, but instead of saying, come inside the fence, we're saying, come drink. And what I like about that, I think what resonates, I feel like first off, I would just say, I think it's biblical and I think it's Christ-like. But building a well has this idea of taste and see. Beauty is the thing that draws us to truth. And I think sometimes we've kind of reversed the order, and I think that can work. I think sort of an apologetics-driven, like evidence that demands a verdict was like, very timely for a season, and apologetics still has value, but I don't know if winning arguments is the way of drawing people into the kingdom. And I think so much more effective these days seems to be beauty. That to point people towards the beauty of this, and the beauty draws us to the goodness, and the goodness draws us to the truth. It's not a diminishing of any of these things. It's not a watering down of anything, but it's pointing people to the beauty. And I think what you find with this is something that is uniting not just left and right, but top to bottom. I think that you have in the world young people that are hungry for spirituality and yet find themselves hesitant. You've got these two terms. Have you heard these terms? You've got the nuns and the duns. The nuns are the people that check, what's your religious affiliation? None. And this is a hugely growing demographic. Not to mention the fact that people are on the other side going, done. Right? Tried it, and I'm on my way out. And I think for our church, I feel like we have a vision that actually draws in both of those. And I think incredibly well. And I think beauty is one of the key ways that you do that. The people that are saying, this is too small, I think come in and find at the well that it's bigger than they thought. I've shared this story with you a few times, but in this debate between Richard Dawkins and Francis Collins, it was in Newsweek. It was these two brilliant men, one an atheist, one a Christian scientist, not a Christian scientist, but a Christian Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And a PhD.
Scientific Christian.
There you go. And at the end of the debate, I mean, it was just, it's wonderful to read. You can go find it online, but Dawkins had kind of gotten pushed to the point where in frustration, he said, fine, I'll admit there could be a God, but he's bigger than you think he is. And I just go, who has a problem with that? Right? And to me, I think it's the safety of the well, right? As you just say, just come drink, right? Just come drink, taste and see. And I think Jesus again and again taught us that way. Question everything, cling to the good, right? Taste and see. And beauty is not superficial, it's deep. And we live in a community, I think, that really, truly understands that, values it. We've got brilliant artists that are pointing us to the deep truth. And sometimes truth can be hard, beauty can be hard for us to look at as well. But it does a powerful work. My heart is for us as a church by the sea to continue to be that well. And I think when we do that, we're fulfilling these two assignments. One, to maintain diversity and love, in that finding that unity in the midst of diversity. And the second, to continue to be a place of healing where people are finding their way in for the first time going, what is this? But we also have people finding their way back in. And I love that. And one of my favorite moments of ministry this year, as we've been sharing about that, happened outside of the church. I mean, I've been here for 16 years. One of the most delightful things is all these leaders that are still connected with youth ministry. We're all little kids in the youth group forever ago, you know, which means the world to me. And as a result of it, I've been doing wedding after wedding, which is awesome. But at Caleb's wedding, you know, Rick came up to me afterwards and just said, I just got to tell you about a friend of mine who's completely an atheist, totally dug in, wants nothing to do with Christianity, that came up to me afterwards and was saying, basically, in so many words, I experienced God in that service.
Wow.
And going, the beauty of this, this moment, looking into the heart. I mean, here you've got Caleb and McKenna, this beautiful setting, but you go, the depth of what we celebrate there in that moment. And as he's looking in, he's going, okay, wait, I want that. This thing that I find myself so often against. I love that it's disarming. I think beauty has this way, okay, to quote a little C.S. Lewis, you know, that's coming. But he says, you know, it steals past the dragons, the watchful dragons. And that all of us, you know, have these kind of protectors of truth, and that beauty has this way of sneaking past. And I love that about God. I mean, I think that his truth is constantly pushing us deeper and deeper in, showing us more and more of who God is, and that beauty has this way of disarming us in a really good way. I'm going to wrap it up here, but I just want kind of one last illustration of all of this. Part of the humility is the ability for us to sit next to people that think a little different than we do, or celebrate a little bit different than we do, that we're drawn by a common truth. But part of the humility, I think, is realizing that all of us have room to grow. Wouldn't you agree? For the rest of our lives, right? And this is something, hopefully, that we find ourselves committed to. And the beauty of the Christian walk is, I think, sometimes you're towards the end and you're finding yourself in a place of discouragement, and it's somebody actually early on in the journey that draws you back in, right? So you have this wonderful way that we're able to minister to each other wherever we find ourselves in our Christian walk. That all of us desperately need to keep growing, and then to be also helping each other to grow. And I was thinking, I feel like our church in some ways is like a one-room schoolhouse. And what that means is that we're all sitting there at so many different places learning together, right? And so we sit in there from all different walks of life. I mean, every different, like all the economic strata, all of us are at different places, and yet here we are learning. And with that, I just want to say that that sometimes you may have a sermon that you think, oh, I already know that, and that's okay. Maybe it wasn't for you that Sunday. Maybe it was for somebody else, and that's good too. Maybe there's something in that lesson that's worth relearning. I want to also say sometimes you may hear points where you're thinking, it doesn't apply, and you go, that's okay. Too, right? That's all right. You listen to something and think, oh, it doesn't totally make sense. And you go, I think you can listen to a sermon and grab onto the thing that's for you. And I think it will be. As much as Chris is saying, when you go up to the mountains to meet God, he'll meet you there. I think when you listen to a sermon, with a desire to grow, you'll hear something. But that doesn't mean every single part is going to be for you, right? So, and I think this is a little bit casting vision for our teaching rotation, that you're going to hear from a plurality of different speakers. Some you resonate with, some you don't. I've always said this before, probably the ones you resonate with least are the best for you. But let me just say this too, just to cast a little vision here. If you see, I hope this doesn't sound offensive. If you see a quote that goes up that you don't quite get, snap a photo of it and go back and reread it. Because honestly, I think you may get some things in here that you're going, ah, it feels like just a little much. And I would say, oh, that's so valuable. That's so valuable. If you hear something and you're like, oh, this is pushing me, just go, no, this is good. This is actually how we grow. And so to be stretched, or to have to go back and listen online to a sermon and go, oh, that's what that was about, right? Is actually part of how we learn. It's just, it's good pedagogy, to use a big word. It's the way that we learn. And so with all of that, realize that with the plurality that you're getting there, I think this is something that people, when they walk into the church, often go, okay. And you have to get used to. But I think people, as they stick around, go, ah, I get it, right? And I think it stretches us and it grows us in a really good way. In the end, in order for this to work, especially in a day and age like ours, it requires grace. And I would say this for all of us, just this as a reminder, that you may experience things that you go, I'd do that different. That may be calling, by the way. If you're looking at the church and going, why doesn't somebody do this? It's probably you, right? It's probably on you. That's probably God's nudge. Somebody turn on the air conditioning. Go, Diane. But honestly, I think that's something important to realize. But I think as we've felt at the church at times, some of these things that we do have been tested a little bit. I would encourage you just with this, that grace is basic looking at each other and going, I think they're doing the best they can. And we have a tendency not to do that. We have a tendency to want others to think that of us, but not to extend the same. And I would just encourage us as a body, as we really are modeling this idea of what it means to love each other and the difference, so look at each other with that grace and think, I think they're doing the best they can. And with that, I think so often comes the sort of change that we're longing for when we extend grace. As it turns out, it's far better motivator than we realize, and actually frees us from quite a bit of anxiety at the same time. That's it. That's my last little parental bit there. So take that for what it's worth. Let me just say, you know, in kind of bringing this meeting to a close, and then we're going to have a chance to affirm our leadership. But, you know, Jay was saying the other day, what a joy it is to be at a church like this. And it's a special place. I really do think this is one of God's favorite churches. But it's a little bit of bias, but we sure feel fortunate to be here, Patty and I. We love this community. We love this church. And gosh, we've been here 16 years. And we still feel new. Compared to Jay, we're new. 40-something years. But we love the deep roots of this town. And we love this church. And as quirky and eclectic as we are, I think it's part of the charm. And so sure love you guys. And it's a privilege to be able to pastor this church, so thank you.